Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk, of course, about the history of bodybuilding, and I'm your host, John Hansen. And on today's show, we've got another interview with Jerry Branum, one of my favorite guests. Interviewed Jerry. This was actually before the Mr. Olympia contest, so it was probably like probably 2 months ago. And I was supposed to do the interview with Lonnie Teeper and Jerry together, but we couldn't get those guys together because of their conflicting schedules. So I interviewed Lonnie separately, and we ran that interview right before the Olympia. And then I interviewed Jerry, and this was before the Mr. Olympia. So Jerry kind of gave me his predictions for the Mr. Olympia. But mostly we talked about his five most exciting Mr. Olympia contests, and we talked about that with Lonnie too. But with Jerry, we were just kind of all over the board. We were talking about a lot of different subjects related to bodybuilding, including Jerry's thoughts on the drugs that the guys are taking today compared to how they took before. So Jerry's always an entertaining guest. He has a lot of thoughts on bodybuilding. And of course, Jerry Branum, if you don't know, has been around bodybuilding since the 1960s. Jerry saw the second Mr. Olympia back in 1966, which was Larry Scott's second Mr. Olympia before he retired. So Jerry got to see that at the Brooklyn Academy of Music. So that's some real history. And then Jerry moved to California in 1968. He moved right before Arnold moved. And actually, he met Arnold when Arnold first came to Vince's gym. So Jerry was friends with Arnold and Franco and Frank Zane, and he got to know all those guys because he trained at Gold's Gym. So he's got a ton of stories and a lot of history in the sport. So he's always really, really entertaining to talk to. Plus, Jerry's got a lot of knowledge about nutrition and how the body works and what these drugs do to the body. So we're going to talk a lot about that today, too. So it's just kind of an off-topic interview today with Jerry Branum. We talked for a couple hours, so we'll put part one up today, and then we'll have part two next week. And then for our article of the week, I hope you guys are enjoying these. Let me know. Email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com. Let me know if you're enjoying these articles and what kind of articles you want to hear. This is the oldest Ironman I think I have. It's July 1972. It's got Casey Viator on the cover. After Casey won the 1971 Mr. America at 19 years old. He is the youngest Mr. America winner ever. And it's a great side chest pose by a pool. And it's a great shot of Casey. So I looked through this magazine and I found a really good article called Training in South Africa for the Mr. Universe by Frank Zane. And I just finished Frank Zane's new book, which I think was called the Frank Zane Bodybuilding Manual. I really recommend it. You could go to frankzane.com and get the book. It's kind of an expensive book. It's over 70 bucks, but it was really cool because, you know, Frank Zane's got, well, he's 77 now. He started training at 14, so he's got over 60 years experience in bodybuilding, and talks all about the beginning of when he started at 14 and all the training routines he did to win all the competitions he was in, or which ones worked, which ones didn't. And it goes all the way up to the present day, like how he trains today in his 70s. So it's really a fascinating book. I always liked Frank Zane. He's always been one of the most intelligent and thoughtful bodybuilders out there. He really tries to understand what the training and the nutrition does to his body. It's very insightful. So you don't really get these kind of insight anymore from the bodybuilders today. So it's really always interesting to read about Frank Zane's career. He even got into the mental aspect of meditation, visualization. If you read his book, he talks about how he would say a mantra over and over again the years he won the Mr. Olympia, saying that he was Mr. Olympia. And he would say that a million times that year before he competed in the Mr. Olympia. And it worked. You know, he won all those Mr. Olympias. So it's really a great book. So I'm going to read this article. I'm sure this will be a really great article. This is way back in 1972, the July 1972 issue of Iron Man magazine. All right, before we get to all that, I want to mention that we are brought to you by our sponsor, Old School Labs. I have been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. It's the brand I used to win the Natural Mr. Universe for the third time in 2012. You may have heard of their award-winning fat burner called Vintage Burn. It's the world's first muscle-preserving fat burner. Or Vintage Blast, which is their two-stage pre-workout. Or Vintage Brawn, which is the triple protein isolate powerhouse. It's packed with eggs, milk, and beef protein. Their products have no proprietary blends, no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. Old School Labs is also the home of 1983 Mr. Olympia Samir Banute and bodybuilding legend Tom Platz. So use the discount code LEGENDS12 and you will get 12% off your order when you go to oldschoollabs.com. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. All right, the really bad news this week in bodybuilding. This has really been a tough year for bodybuilding. We started off 2019 on January 1st with Ed Corney passing away, which was a real big loss to the bodybuilding community. And then, of course, just about 2 months ago, we lost Franco Colombo, one of the greatest bodybuilders ever, two-time Mr. Olympia, real legend in the sport, Arnold Schwarzenegger's best friend. So those two losses were really, really tough. And then this week, I found out that Flex Wheeler, one of the greatest bodybuilders ever, one of the best bodybuilders of the 1990s, four-time Arnold Classic champion, plus a ton of other pro bodybuilding titles, second to Mr. Olympia, I think two or three times. Flex had his leg amputated, part of his leg, his right leg below his knee. I guess when he had, I'm not really sure what happened, but I think it was a vein in his leg that wasn't draining, and he's been having problems with it, and then they ended up having to amputate part of his leg this week. So that was really, really bad news. So that's been all over the message boards and the YouTube and everything this week. I've been watching some old videos of Flex, and he did a real good video with London Real, who did a couple interviews with Dorian Yates a couple years ago. And so they did one also with Flex Wheeler. And it was really, really interesting. I didn't realize how much of his background I didn't know about, you know, growing up in Fresno, and he tried to commit suicide when he was like 11 years old. Had a really tough childhood, never knew his father, grew up in a really tough neighborhood, started martial arts, and then eventually got into bodybuilding. But anyways, in the interview, Flex mentions that when he had this kidney transplant, and he said it was just this rare disease that he got, he said it really wasn't had anything to do with the steroids or the diuretics. But he said when he got this disease that I guess ruined his kidney, he had to get a kidney transplant. And the person that he got the kidney from was a smaller female. And because she was smaller, her kidney was smaller. And when they did the transplant, they had to get a vein from his leg in order to complete the transplant process. So I'm wondering if this process, or when they took that vein, if that's what caused the problems that he's having now, and then ended up with his leg eventually getting amputated. So I'm not really sure exactly what happened, but Flex has had a really, really tough time over the last 15 years. He's had a lot of health problems, but he's a very, very strong guy. So our prayers go out to Flex Wheeler. He's one of the greatest bodybuilders of all time. Could have easily won a Mr. Olympia contest if it wasn't for Dorian or for Ronnie. And I think if he would have shown up in the Mr. Olympia like he did before in some of the other shows, like the Pro Ironman or the Arnold Classic, I think he easily could have won Mr. Olympia. He's one of the uncrowned Mr. Olympias of our sport. So tragic news. I hope Flex is okay. I hope he's doing okay mentally as well as physically. And our thoughts and prayers go out to Flex Wheeler. So that was really, really bad news. All right. Getting back to the show, last week, of course, we had part two of our interview with Tony Pearson. And it was about his book called Driven, which is on Amazon.com. So I hope you guys are buying that book and reading it. It's really, really, it was a good book if you're interested in it. I did get one email from Pat Comer. And if you guys want to email me about the show, just email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com. And Pat says, I read Pearson's book before listening to your podcast. The book was excellent. A story of passion and struggle combined with the podcast. It's been a great old school experience. I'm looking forward to the Dale Ruplinger interview. I was very fortunate to meet Dale in 1984. I was a bouncer for a bar in Iowa City that he visited once in a while, and he was always kind enough to take the time to talk to me about bodybuilding. He's definitely going to be a great interview. All right. So, yeah, I hope we can get that interview with Dale. I did talk to him, and he said he was interested in doing it. We just got to get a time. So I hope that goes through. I did get to see Dale compete also back in, I think, 1981, when he won the Mr. Central USA contest out here in Chicago. And then the next year, 1982, he won the Mr. USA overall as a middleweight. And then he went on to win the middleweight class at the Nationals that Lee Haney won. And then he went over to the Mr. Universe, the World Championships, and he won the middleweight class there. And he turned pro. So Dale was an incredible bodybuilder if you never heard of him. He would look so big for his size, for being a middleweight. It was amazing. All right. We did get some comments on my Facebook page also about the Tony Pearson interview. Richard Perillo said, outstanding. Part one was excellent. Part two was equally great. Thank you, Tony and John. And Tony Pearson said, thank you. Shaddy Shatster said, Tony Pearson, that was a great interview. And he said, I have a quick question. What's the name of that song that you posed to at the 1985 Mr. Olympia? And Tony said he would get back to him, but he never did. Skip Robinson said, Tony is a true champion. And Bill Westling said, another great interview, John Hansen. Once again, it shows how the hard times make us who we are to move forward. Yeah, so that really was a good interview. I hope you guys enjoyed it. And the guys over at Bodybuilding Nerds Radio, BJ and Scott McNally, they both liked it. So thank you guys for another review of our show over at Bodybuilding Nerds Radio, which is on podcast. They do a podcast every week, and they review all the different bodybuilding podcasts, and they always talk about mine, so I appreciate that. All right, so that was it for our emails. If you guys got any emails, any questions, any comments about the show, any suggestions of who you want to hear interviewed, just email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com. All right, before we get to our interview with Jerry Branum, I also want to mention our other sponsor, who is Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results that you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number out here in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939. Again, that's 813-922-8939. Or you can just go to their website, which is flalternativemeds.com, flalternativemeds.com. Tell them that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. You will get a free consultation from them. Plus, they will give you 20% off your first order. All right, so that's it for our opening. Here's our interview with the great Jerry Branum to talk about the most exciting Mr. Olympia contest, in his opinion. And we're also going to talk about a lot of other subjects related to bodybuilding. Here we go. All right. Welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and my special guest again is Jerry Branum.
One of the booths talking to a friend of mine, and he comes up on a bicycle with a woman. He says, hey, Jerry, it's me, Steve. And I'm thinking, I said, Steve? And I said, and then he takes his hat off, and I recognized him, you know, Steve Davis.
Yeah.
It was good to see him. You know, I know him for many years, and I haven't seen him in many, many years. You know, and
I did an interview with him on my show. He was pretty good. He was a pretty nice guy.
Yeah, he's a nice guy. He's very intelligent, and his wife's a judge, you know. And I also, of course, ran into Melvin.
Anthony, yeah, I saw that, yeah.
Nice to see him there, you know.
I didn't know he was out of prison.
Yeah, I didn't know either. Paul Williams was there, and he said, you know, Melvin Anthony. I said, Melvin's here? And he pointed to him, and as soon as Melvin saw me, he came up to me, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I used to interview him when I worked for Weider, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he's in pretty good shape for a guy who was in prison for, you know, he's a, you know, nice guy, very friendly.
Yeah.
You know, when I used to, I remember when I worked for Weider, when I used to talk to him, he always called me Mr. Brainer. I used to say, you can call me Jerry, it's okay, you know.
Yeah.
But he's a nice guy. You know, I like that joke because, you know, I mean, I train at Gold's late at night. I don't see a lot of people.
Yeah.
In that contest, I don't go to many. In fact, that's the only contest I go to these days.
Mm-hmm.
The three beach shows, and so you know, it gives me an opportunity to see some old friends that I almost never see.
Yeah,
so I see them. Literally, the only like Phil Williams. You know, it's the only time I see these guys.
Yeah, yeah.
So I always go down there for that reason alone. I don't watch the contest, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I mean, Doug Wignoli was a judge. I said hello to him too. He's an old friend too.
Yeah.
You know, I enjoy going down there just to speak to old friends and stuff, walk around a little bit, you know. It's kind of fun.
Is Steve Davis still married to that same girl that he was with, you know, when he was competing?
No.
No, okay.
I don't know. I didn't ask him what happened to her. I know he had a kid with her, at least one.
Oh, really? Okay.
She's an adult by now. That was years ago. She'd be in her, who knows, 30s, 40s. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
But this one I never met before. She's a judge and a very nice lady. Very nice. Very nice lady.
Okay.
Spoke to her too. Very, very. Both of them are great people. Steve and his wife.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a nice guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, did you get a chance to do your top five here?
Well, you know, I know that you interviewed I didn't get a chance to watch it. I just got a link. I guess you interviewed Sean Ray about the same topic, right? About his predictions.
Well, he was talking about the 2019 Olympia.
Oh, the 2019.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we were just like talking about the guys going in it and stuff, you know.
Oh, you didn't give any actual predictions?
No.
Well, you know, the predictions is tough because, I mean, we're both bodybuilders. We both competed. You know that the only way, real way to – let me preface my remark. Are you taping? Is this started, Ray?
I got to tape them, but we won't do – you know, we'll just – go ahead.
Well, what I was going to say was that, you know, the only real way to make a prediction is you actually have to watch him come out on stage.
Yeah, yeah.
And after covering contests for so many years, I could see the guys just walk on stage and I could pick the top five within literally 2 minutes if I see them all standing
right.
Even if you throw a pose.
Yeah.
But the problem is that these guys have been issuing, as you know, preview videos of themselves. Like Rolly Winkler had one and a couple other guys. And, you know, they look great in the video, but I've learned from experience, and I know you know this too, how they look in the video doesn't necessarily translate into how they'll look the night of the contest.
Yeah.
I've seen so many bodybuilders over the years who look like fantastic 3 days before.
Yeah.
The contest, they look completely different. They started holding water or something like that.
Yeah.
It's always a danger.
Yeah, it's, you know, always, it's just guesswork because you have no idea what they're going to look like, right?
I could give I could tell you what I think the top – you got a message? Oh.
Yeah, let me shut off Facebook so I don't
I should shut off my phone too because it's going to probably ring. Hold on a second. Hold on. Okay.
No, but what I want to do with this show, Jer, I want to do the top five most exciting Mr. Olympias. Were you able to come up with a list for that? Okay.
Yeah, that's great. Sure.
And it doesn't even have to be a show you were at. It could just be a show you knew about or whatever, you know.
Well, if you want, I could give you my approximate top six in this Olympia.
Okay.
But of course, it would have to be strictly speculative, you know. You want me to give it to you now?
Sure, yeah.
All right. Well, there's no particular order. Brandon Curry, William Bonac, Hadi Chopin.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And what's his name? Did I say Rolly Winkler yet?
No.
Dexter Jackson's in there. I'll give you a couple of more that I think are in the place in the top 10 just to make it good. Josh Laurentowicz, I think he'll make the top 10.
I don't think he's doing it, Jer.
Oh, he isn't? Because he's listed it. Okay, all right. So
he's on the list, but I think he's not doing it for health reasons or something.
Did you hear anything about whether Phil Heath's going in or not?
I heard he's not, yeah. I think his girlfriend is going through something, and he said he wants to be there to support her. I guess some kind of operation.
Okay, so we eliminate him. The others I think will place pretty high. I said Rolly Winkler, of course. I saw Sean Rode in the gym the other day. He's obviously not going in. He's kind of smooth right now.
Oh, is he really? Okay.
Yeah. I think this guy Luke Sandow might make the top 10 also.
Yeah, I do too.
And let me see, who else did I leave out? Possibly Nathan Dasher. He has a chance to make it. I'd say those are. Those are the guys who I picked to make the top 10, you know, for sure. You know, but again, the order, I mean, a lot of people are just Brandon Curry, but I mean.
That's who I picked, too. I picked Brandon Curry.
I would normally go with Brandon Curry, but this guy, Hadi Chopin, looks incredible.
Yeah. When I did my article, he wasn't even in it yet. So he's, you know, I didn't put him in the top six.
I mean, the guy comes from Iran. How he is getting into the – I heard he's already in the country. How he got in with all this about Trump is amazing. I don't know how the hell he did that.
Yeah, I don't either.
Well, you know, I think I can make an educated guess. You know that the guy who basically owns the Olympia is David Pecker.
Yeah, yeah.
You know AMI. David's close friend is, right? Donald Trump.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, I didn't think about that.
Pecker might have pulled a couple of strings because, I mean, I can't see how a guy from Iran could just walk right into the country.
No.
Man, of all countries, Iran. He just walks right in. No, something had to go on in the back. I'm just guessing. That's speculation.
Yeah, I didn't, you know, that's right. I didn't even think. I forgot about the National Enquirer with Donald Trump. I forgot all about that.
The other thing I'd comment on is the special invitation. Cedric Millen. I like Cedric Millen.
Me too. I love him.
I like his personality.
Yeah.
I like the way he exudes some personality on stage. I like that. But I'm wondering if it would have been nicer to maybe get somebody like what's his name? Who's the guy? Oh, the guy with the ponytail almost beat Hayes. What the hell's his name again?
Kai Greene.
Kai Greene. Something. Yeah. I don't know if Kai Greene would be interested, but I think for the sake of promotion, you know, people to come to the contest, it would have been better if they would have contacted Kai Greene maybe 4 or 5 months ago.
Yeah.
And did him the special invitation, because my personal opinion, I don't know if you agree with this, Kai Greene competing would have drawn much more people made it an interesting contest.
For sure. Absolutely. I think he's making a movie though in India or something.
Okay. Well, he's out of the picture too, but
yeah,
I mean, Kai Greene came in his best shape. I think he'd win this kind of, looking at the lineup, I think he'd beat even, what's his name, Brandon Curry. I think he would.
Yeah.
In top shape. But like right now, I'm going to go with Brandon Curry in first.
Me too.
Maybe Hadi Chalpin, assuming he's in great shape, maybe give him second. And I'm not wondering, by the way, what happened to Big Ramy? He decided not to compete.
He was out of shape last year, remember, and he didn't make the top five. So he had to requalify, and he didn't do any shows. He was supposed to do the one in Tampa, where I live, and he dropped out of it. But now he's guest posing, and he looks pretty good. He's actually lighter in body weight. He's pretty cut. And he looked like he lost some weight. You know, he downsized. But they won't let him in because he didn't qualify. He had a chance to qualify, and he never did, so.
And he wouldn't qualify as a special invite because he didn't bother to qualify. You know, he's too close to the company. You have to get a guy like Kai who hasn't competed in a couple of years. But
right.
With Cedric Millen's, I wish him the best. I don't know the man personally, but I think he's got a great physique, and I like. I hope he makes the top. Six. I really do.
I think out of all the guys, he's got more of the old school physique, right? Don't you think?
Yeah. And like I say, he comes off as a really likable guy, too.
Yeah, he's got a great personality.
Whereas, in my opinion, I mean, I think that he's kind of 360 degrees away from Phil Heath, who, even when he tries to be likable, just can't help slipping into arrogance every time.
Right, yeah.
You start to say, you watch him talk in an interview, and you say, maybe the guy's not so bad after all. Then he starts to say something, and it's freaking arrogant. You say, this guy's a putz,
Right.
It happens every time I hear this guy interviewed.
I know.
Great bodybuilder. And I have to say, if he had trained for this show, of course, he automatically qualifies.
Yeah.
If he had trained for the show and got even equaled, let's say the way he was 2 years ago, not last year, but 2 years ago.
Right.
He would have been an absolute easy winner. There's no way any guys could touch Heath. I'll give him that. I always give credit where credit due. It's like, I think I told you in one of our interviews, I didn't personally like Sergio Oliva Sr., but as a person, but I still rate him as one of the greatest bodybuilders, probably one of the top three genetically gifted bodybuilders of all time. I give credit even if I don't like the person.
Right.
I have to do that.
Yeah.
So. That's what I'll say about Heath, too.
And first place is like $400,000. I mean, that's a lot. That's $500,000.
It's going up, yeah. But it was $400,000 last year, I believe, that's what Sean got. It would be nice if they could have maybe tacked on another 50 grand, maybe 450 grand every year a little bit. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just a nice gesture, and I say that, because Pecker can easily afford that. I know he could without any problem.
Yeah.
But I guess they figure, $400,000 is enough for these guys. Let me ask you a question, John, your opinion. Let's say that this controversy didn't happen with Sean Roden. In other words, this case, whatever it is, you know, the accusal and all that. I mean, if he came in top shape and let's say a little bit better than last year, how do you think, you know, considering all these other guys, in your opinion, how do you think the contest would have gone?
I think it would still be tight between him and Brandon. I think Brandon's made so much improvement over the last year. I think it would have been really tight.
Yeah, but keep in mind, remember that my theory of my Mr. Olympia incumbent theory.
Yeah, he would have had an advantage, yeah.
He already got like a 2-point advantage.
Right.
You know, so, you know, I agree it would have been really close. But that's a hard one to pick if they're both in top shape, to be honest.
Yeah, the only thing Sean was weak in was his back. Remember, he didn't really have a thick back.
No, yeah, that he need to improve that, you know.
And Brandon, Brandon's got a great back.
No, very wide, tremendous.
Yeah. I always liked that guy's shape, even like years ago before he had all the size. I was always predict him in the top 10, and a lot of times he would never make the top 10. But I said, this guy is great. You know, he's a great bodybuilder because of his shape.
Well, I don't know if you saw what I wrote on Facebook. Yet. I met him right after he won the USA. Bill Grant introduced me to him.
Really? I didn't see that.
Yeah, he was at a contest in Culver City, and I'd seen a couple of photos of him. And I said to him, I said, you know, you got incredible potential. You got full muscle build. I said, I see you as a future Mr. Olympia, I told him.
This is, wow.
over 10 years ago, I guess it was, when he won the US. You know, he was a really nice guy. Thanked me. It's the only time I ever spoke to the guy. But the only thing I don't like about Brandon is his legs look real thick from the side. But I think they're a little bit out of balance to his upper body.
Yeah, me too.
His arms and his upper body and his width, it's so huge that I think his legs, you know, it's kind of like Big Ramy, you know, where his thighs were so humongous that it made his calves look skinny almost.
Yeah.
And if you look at his calves alone, they weren't that bad. It's just that his thighs were so overdeveloped.
Yeah, totally overdeveloped.
Like he had lollipop legs. You know,
right, right.
So other than that, but I mean, like you say, I mean, he has Curry's made tremendous improvement. I mean, he's incredible. Jeez, the guy is so thick now.
Yeah, yeah. He's made improvements since he won the Arnold. I mean, he looks much better than he did 6 months ago.
I understand this guy Curry has a wife and like six kids or something like that. Somebody told me, is that right?
I think he's got four. Yeah, at least four.
And what he does is he goes to Kuwait.
Kuwait, yeah.
And he just stays there for months at a time.
Yeah,
you know, just
like 6 months at a time.
And he just leaves the family and he's that dedicated.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I think about a guy like, when I hear that, I think about a guy like Lee Haney.
Yeah.
You know, Lee Haney was so dedicated to his wife and kids, he wouldn't leave them for 1 hour.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm not trying to put Brandon down.
No, I know.
Just goes to show you the different personalities. I mean, you know, Brandon obviously feels that in the long run, I'm guessing, that, you know, by being successful, he's helping his family because he can make money. So it's a bit of a sacrifice, but in the long run, they're going to benefit. I'm trying to figure it out. I guess that makes sense, you know.
Yeah, that's the way he looks at it. He's like, well, I'm just doing this for the family. And I guess she puts up, you know, she accepts it too, his wife. And it is working for him. I mean, when he goes away, he does improve tremendously.
He really does. I know. Yeah. I got to give credit. Yeah.
Yeah. And me and Jerry are going to pick, just for fun, our top five most exciting Mr. Olympia ever. So, Jerry, this is kind of a hard list to pick out, isn't it?
Yes, it is. But I'll tell you, it might surprise you. The number one on my list was the very first Mr. Olympia I saw in person.
65.
It goes way back, 1966.
Okay, 66.
Second year of the Olympia, and the incumbent Olympia was Larry Scott. Hardly had any contestants, if I remember correctly. Would they have about five, maybe five contestants that year?
I think four. I think it was Larry, Harold Poole, Sergio, and Chuck Sipes.
Chuck Sipes, that was that. Yeah, exactly. But to me, it was very exciting because, first of all, it was my first Mr. Olympia I ever saw in person.
Okay.
Lou Ferrigno was there. He was just a little bit younger than me. He was there too.
How old was he at the time?
He was, at the time I was 16 and he was 15.
Okay.
Yeah. So I didn't see him there, but I know he was there. But the thing is, you know, as a kid, I was into bodybuilding. I read all the magazines and man, did I admire Larry Scott. He was like the king and the excitement of, I think we talked about this before. He took like 20 minutes to come out on stage.
Right.
Had this platinum colored hair. I mean, the audience went crazy. 20 minute standing ovation. I mean,
yeah,
that to me will always be the most memorable Mr. Olympia. Not so much because of the, you know, number of competitors. Obviously, hardly had any.
Yeah.
But also, and I was very excited to see Chuck Sipes, who was another guy. And Harold Poole was actually a personal friend of mine. I knew him.
Yeah.
He trained at the same gym. So I was kind of rooting for Harold. You know?
Yeah.
Sergio Oliva, you know, that unfortunately was one of the occasions. You know the story.
Yeah.
You know, when I went backstage and tried to
told you to get the fuck out of here.
You know, so it was not an auspicious beginning for me and Sergio, you know. But still, I mean, I remember looking at the guy, and of course, he was kind of small back then compared to the way he got later on.
Yeah.
But I remember he had that little tiny waist, he's, you know, and he did that famous upper arm pull.
Yeah.
I said, wow, because I said, how can a guy look so good with his arms up? Everybody looks terrible when they bring Zero. You know, their arms look small, they don't have a lap. This
right.
guy has, because of that tiny waist, he had that wide taper. So I definitely say the 66 Olympia was number one as far as most exciting for those reasons for me. I definitely would say that.
Hey, yeah. Larry, Jerry, I got to ask you, did Chuck Sipes go on stage and do like a strongman act? Because I read that in the articles that he did that.
You know, I don't recall, but I think he might have come out and blew a hot water bottle.
Yeah,
like, yeah. He had a loincloth, like, you know how Bill Cole.
Yeah.
That lion, long, you know, I don't know how to describe, like a loincloth. It looked like a lion skin.
Yeah, yeah.
And he came out and blew up a hot water bottle. Yeah, okay. He was a very strong guy. I mean, this is a guy who, kind of like Franco in a way, because he was a bodybuilder with prodigious strength. I mean, he could bench press over 500. This guy was for real.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of people, you have to understand, in those days, the steroid use was minimal. It was, I mean... In other words, the strength that Chuck Sipes had was just his inherent strength. It wasn't from taking drugs.
Yeah.
He's a really rugged, strong guy. I mean, he used to do – you see photos of him. He used to cut wood in the woods.
And yeah,
this, this guy just – this is like your real man type of guy. You know
right,
what I mean?
A man's man, yeah.
I mean, I was impressed by him too. I mean, he looked great to me. I all the guys look good that night. You know, I was very – you know, I'm 50 – what was that? Well, I just – let's see, how old are Yeah, I was 16. I was going to say 50, but I was 16. So, you know, to see these guys in person like that, other than Harold, who I'd seen many times before.
Yeah.
Larry Scott, I mean, I was just so excited to see him. You know, I mean, I did get to meet him, you know, right afterwards. So I only talked to him really briefly.
Yeah.
I don't remember what I said to him or what he said to me. Like I said, I think I told you in a previous interview, the thing I remember about that is when Joe Weider came out the side door, the stage door.
Yeah.
But, you know, there was a crowd of about 200-300 people in the streets waiting. As soon as Larry came out with Joe, they kind of rushed him, you know, and Joe, him and Joe were trying to get through the crowd, and they wound up running down the street. It was hilarious. They should have put this in that movie about Joe. It would have been a nice scene. You know,
yeah,
movie.
Yeah.
Him and Larry Scott running down the street trying to get a cab. It was funny. I still remember that.
Yeah.
That it's another highlight of that show. That's
right. Talking about Chuck Sipes, we just talked about Franco not too long ago. And, I said Franco used to come out like in the 1974 Mr. Olympia in New York. And he did a deadlifting exhibition on the day he was competing. I was like, wow, that's so different from how it is today. Bodybuilders would never do that. Can you imagine a guy in the Mr. Olympia going out and doing a deadlift competition?
It reminds me of this, what was the name of that boxer? I can't remember. There was a famous boxer. I think he's retired now. He actually played a full court basketball game 2 hours before he had a professional.
Oh, really? Fight. Wow.
His name. But, you know, I mean, that I thought, I had the same thought. I said, wait a minute, this guy's playing basketball 2 hours before he has a major fight, you know, for a major title? I never heard of that.
Right.
What person does that?
Right.
It's a steal, you know?
Yeah.
But of course, you know, Franco was just an unusual guy, you know, I mean. Another just real raw strength there, you know.
I did an interview with, Wayne Galash from Australia.
Very well, yeah.
Yeah, and he said the day that Frank Zane won, I think it was the 1972 NABBA Mr. Universe in London, he said him and Frank were driving to the contest, and they had a while to go. They weren't running late or anything because they used to do the NABBA Universe in the afternoon. And they pulled over to the side of the road, and they went into this park, and it's where Wayne did a lot of photo shoots and a lot of video shoots.
Right.
So they, and sometimes if the gate wasn't open, they would have to climb the fence to get in there. And they did a video shoot with Frank Zane before he went to the Mr. Universe contest. And I was even thinking that. I'm like, most bodybuilders wouldn't do that now. They'd be like, I got to go to the show. I got to relax. I got to put my feet up, you know. He's out there doing a video shoot only hours before he goes on stage at the NAVA Universe.
That is unusual. Yeah, I don't think the guys today would do that. You're right.
Yeah,
different type of personalities.
Back yeah, then. Yeah. They're not as uptight, I think, as they used to be.
Right.
So my number one, Jerry, I picked my first Olympia, too, that I ever saw, which was 1977. So I guess we're going with our, the sentimental choice, the one that we saw the very first one we saw.
Right.
And that was Frank Zane's first Mr. Olympia win. But I just remember, kind of like you, it was just overwhelming to me because I was 14 years old, too, when I saw that contest. And Ed Corney got two standing ovations. And, of course, Arnold was there. He was only 30 years old. He was promoting the show. And Robbie Robinson was in at Boyer Co. And what I really remember, I think probably similar to your experience, is I remember the crowd. The crowd was so crazy for all the competitors. They were going nuts, you know, and it was just an unbelievable experience. I don't think anything's matched it since all the Mr. Olympias I've seen since.
Yeah. Well, another Olympia that stands out in my mind, do you want me to talk about the ones that I didn't attend or the ones I did attend?
Either one, yeah.
Okay. Well, this one I attended. It was held in Chicago, the 1990 Mr. Olympia.
I was at that one too.
Right. And the thing that stands out about that is that this remains to this day the only actual drug-tested Mr. Olympia.
Yeah.
So, you know, before we saw the guys, there was a kind of a mystery thing going because everybody's thinking, what are the guys going to look like without drugs? You know, mm-hmm. I mean, of course, some of them were still taking drugs between, you know, I interviewed a couple of guys, told me off the record they were on growth hormone. But most of the guys actually got off steroids, you know, a couple of weeks before the contest. And, you know, it was interesting to see. And you know, when the contest began, I didn't really see that big a change in quality, a little bit off. In other words, the guys weren't quite as hard. Lee Haney especially was a bit off. He was a little bit off. In fact, Lee Labrada actually won the prejudging, you know. I heard after the prejudging that Labrada was ahead by about 3 points. And I remember thinking, okay, Labrada just beat Haney. Wow, great, you know. And LeBron looked great. I mean, he looked totally in shape. I mean, steroids are not the guy was in peak condition. He was always like that, Lee LeBron.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I comes the night show, and Lee LeBron and Lee Haney wins. So I asked Wayne D'Amelio, who was the head of the pro division at the time. I said, how is it possible that Lee LeBron, won the prejudging by, let's say, 3 points, and Lee Haney, you know, wins the national. I thought Wayne was going to say, well, you know, Lee Haney was the incumbent. You know how it works, Jerry. The guy who's been winning in a couple of years, he kind of has an edge.
Yeah.
What he said, I'll never forget. And I told this to Melvin the other day. Wayne D'Amelio told me that Lee won on his presentation. I said, what? He says, presentation. I said, is presentation posing? And the way you present yourself on stage.
Yeah.
Hold on, Wayne, let me get this straight. Are you trying to say, I mean, I think Lee Haney is fantastic. He's a great, great guy, a great bodybuilder. But are you trying to tell me that you think that Lee Haney is a better poser than Lee Labrada, posers of his era? Lee Labrada was literally poetry in motion. The guy moved like a ballet dancer, for crying out loud.
Right.
He posed. He had a lot. He would just go like this and this. I mean, there's nothing. He didn't, you know, all he did is flex. And you know, Wayne smiled and said, well, that's the way the judges saw it.
Yeah.
I kind of left it at that.
Yeah.
I thought that was very funny that, you know, Lee Haney, they said Lee Haney beat Lee Labrada on posing ability.
Right.
Anyone who sees the two pose would just laugh hysterically at that. I'm sure Lee LeBron, if he hears this, will be laughing himself. You know?
I mean, so what did you have at number two, Jeffrey, your most exciting Mr. Olympia?
Another one I liked was the one in L.A. I believe that was 1988.
Right.
For reasons. First of all, it was held up in Universal City, the movie studio. They had a beautiful set that year. I mean, nice blue, sky blue background. probably one of the nicest sets I've ever seen for the Mr. Olympia.
Yeah.
And the thing, again, that I found intriguing, the reason that stood out is they did something at that contest that they never did again before since at the Olympia, which is I guess you'd call it the public. You know how they have the press conference now?
Yeah.
Well, they didn't really have a press conference. What they did instead was all the competitors showed up on a stage, and Lonnie Tipa was the MC. They all went on a scale and were weighed, you know?
Yeah.
Right? And Lonnie would announce the weight as each guy was on the scale. Now, these guys had been saying in the magazines, you know, someone were claiming to be 240, 250, and it was really – I mean, I remember some of the guys like Barry DeMay, or these, they had made a face before they stepped on the scale. They knew that the scale wasn't going to show the weights listed in the magazines.
Yeah.
It was funny to watch because all the guys were very sheepish. It's like, I remember Rich Gasparri, he claimed to weigh about 215, if I remember correctly.
Or 220 even, yeah.
220 on the scale, he was 205.
Yeah.
And on it went. The only guy who actually weighed what he said he weighed was Lee Haney.
Yeah.
Lee Haney claimed 243, and if I remember correctly, he weighed 242, 1 pound off.
Yeah.
He's this guy. Everybody else, the difference ranged from anywhere from 2 pounds to 25 pounds.
Wow.
It's, you know, and it was just a real smooth show, and they never did that again. I guess, I don't know why.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like, I guess they were trying to duplicate what they do in fighting. You know, they weigh the boxers.
Yeah, because they had the boxers' robes on too, right? And they took that off.
They did. They had the boxers' coat. And I guess they felt it didn't go over well, so they never did it again. You know.
But, well, I emailed Dan Solomon, who's putting on this year as Mr. Olympia, and I said, Dan, you guys should bring back the weigh-in like they did in 1988. But he never responded, so yeah, I guess they're not going to do it.
No, I don't think the guys really want to do that because they'd rather have people believe they weigh 20, 30 pounds more than they do.
I'm
not sure why, but maybe because I guess they feel if somebody thinks they're heavier in their mind, they'll look bigger.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. You know,
who knows? That 1988 show, those guys were all in top shape. That's what I think one of the reasons I really liked that contest. It seemed like that year they decided a lot of the guys, the top guys, or even some of the other guys, they said, I can't compete with Haney on size, so I'm just going to come in my best look.
Everybody was in really hard shape that year. I remember Mike Quinn was ripped. He looked great.
He was 204. He was really ripped.
He looked terrific. One of the best he'd ever looked. You know, I can't think of anyone who was off that year. That's true. Even the guys that didn't place in the top 10, everybody looked in shape that year. That's another reason why it stands out to me. Probably
that's the one they play at Gold's Gym, right? Don't they have that on the TV screen?
Yeah, on the big TV screen, constantly, over and over again.
Yeah. When I was at Gold's Gym last year, I saw that, and I told the guy at my gym, Powerhouse Gym in Tampa, we do that now too. We have a TV in the back, so I gave him the video, the DVD from 1988, and we replay it over and over.
Yeah. Another one that stands out to me was the 91 contest, which was held in Orlando, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
That year it had a lot of controversy because Lee Haney, as you know, was going for his eighth, and it turned out to be final Mr. Olympia title.
Yeah.
The rumor going around was that he was going to lose. One of the IFBB officials came up to me right before the prejudging in the lobby of the hotel. And I was writing for Weider, and he said, Jerry, he said, be prepared. We're going to crown a new Mr. Olympia tonight.
Hmm. Wow.
And this is before the prejudging. Hmm. So the two things that entered my mind immediately is, wait a minute, is this contest fixed? That there's going to be a new winner when the guys haven't even been judged yet.
Right.
The second thought was, who's he talking about? And then I thought about it. I said, well, let's see. I remember the year before I had met this guy from Britain named Dorian Yates. And I didn't know what Dorian Yates looked like yet at the 91 show. I knew him from 90. What I didn't know was that Dorian Yates had put on a lot of size in that year. He was actually bigger than he was the year before. So, you know, I found out later that everybody was figuring that, you know, Dorian Yates, because he had just about everything Haney had. He had the back, you know, and this and that. Of course, you know, he didn't have, let's say, Haney's package as far as the shape goes, but be very close between the two. And there was a political reason involved also. And that was because Lee Haney had kind of left Weider. He didn't have a contract with Weider, and he had signed a contract with Twinlab.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, now I mentioned it. I remember.
Now, at the time, Joe Weider and Bleckman, who ran Twinlab or Muscular Development, they were arch enemies.
Yeah.
So the thought was that Joe would, or somebody would influence the judges, because Haney would be looked at as a traitor. So to punish him, they were going to give it to the newcomer, Lorraine Yates, because Haney, that was the rumor going around. So, you know, you couple all that together and everybody figures that, you know, and that Yates was going to win. Well, come the night of the show, I'm sitting there, and Don Ross is sitting next to me. And sure enough, here they wind up, they all walk on stage. And I turned to Don Ross and said, Don, what do you think? He said, I don't know, Jerry, it's really close between Lee and Dorian, man. It's hard to pick them. Like, mm-hmm. You know, they look really good. Then they started doing the thing where you do the turnaround stuff. And that's when I turned to Don and said, Lee just won.
Oh, from the back?
He still had better back.
Yeah.
I mean, Dorian's back got better, like a year or two, like got better and better.
Sure.
But that year, Lee just completely overpowered him in the back.
Yeah.
And I said to Don, this is right after the contest, I said, Lee Haney wins. I don't give a crap what the political stuff is.
Right.
There's no way they could take it away from Lee. His back just destroyed Dorian's.
Yeah.
He's not, I mean, and you know how it is, you know, with the back stuff. I said, Lee's going to win. And of course, that's what happened.
Yeah. But
it was kind of exciting because, you know, up until the actual show, you really didn't know whether Lee was going to win it or not. Because
yeah.
He had strikes against him, you know, but he came through, you know, he won it. And of course he retired after that, you know, and then I remember interviewing Dorian after the show. And I said, Dorian, what's up for you? You know, he says, I'm going to be the Mr. Olympia of the 90s. I said, what do you mean? He says, well, other than this contest, I'm going to win the Mr. Olympia every year through the 90s, maybe 6-7 times, he goes.
Wow.
Insane, right?
Yeah.
So I reminded him, and that years later, his prediction came completely true.
Yeah,
talk about,
yeah.
And that's what you call self-confidence.
Right, you know? Right.
It really came true, you know.
Yeah, that was an exciting Olympia, and that was the year also that Lee Haney beat Arnold's record. He won it 8 times that year.
That was another thing that added to the excitement.
Yeah.
The record would finally be broken, you know, and Lee did it, you know.
And I think Lee was smart retiring at that time. I think that was a good choice. Most guys don't make that choice. Most guys keep going until they get beat, right?
I think that I definitely agree with that. I think he made a smart choice. Whether he could have won another year, I don't know, because Dorian did improve from 91 to 92. He improved quite a bit, you know.
Yeah, he sure did. Yeah.
You know, it would have been risky for Lee Haney to go in again. So, you know, he definitely made the right choice.
Yeah.
I think, without question. That's another Olympia that stands out in my mind, the 92 one, which if I believe, wasn't that held? Is that the one that was held in Helsinki?
Helsinki, Finland, yeah.
Yeah, I traveled over to that one.
Oh, you did? Okay.
I was there. And the thing that stands out in my mind was the big feature of that contest was that, you know, Lou Ferrigno.
Oh, that's right.
Would be returning to the Olympia. I think a year before, he had tried to win the first Masters Olympia, and he lost to Robbie Robinson.
No, the Masters, I think, was after, Jerry. I think the Masters was 94. So
was
I think,
oh.
Yeah, I think Lou did the Olympia, the regular Olympia in 92, 93.
Okay,
and then he did the Masters, yeah.
But in 92, you know, the big thing was that, you know, Lou was going to go in the Olympia, and he was going to be 300 pounds. And,
yeah.
You know, blah, blah, and, you know, nobody's going to beat him and this and that. Of course, that didn't happen. He looked great. I mean, looked great. And I remember I was sitting in the audience right next to his wife and kids, who were very young at the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, all the guys, they had to step on, you know, take like 3 steps onto a big platform. And, you know, the guys have oil all over them. You know, so by the time Lou got to came out, the platform was like freaking ice. It was slippery.
Wow.
And Lou steps up to the platform and falls down.
Really? Oh, man, I didn't know that.
His wife screamed. She was right next to me.
Oh, God.
And the kid, one of his young kids starts crying.
Oh, you know? No.
They thought that Lou, like, you know, broke his – but
yeah.
Lou, it wasn't hurt at all. He just jumped right up and acted like nothing happened.
Yeah. Oh, God.
He went right into his posing routine. You know, he did the whole pose. You know,
right.
He wasn't hurt at all. But I'll never forget that his wife screamed, which is really funny. You know, which was kind of dumb when you think. I mean, you think they would, you know, have a guy come in between and maybe wash off some damn oil so that, you know, it's dangerous.
Put a towel down there or something, you know.
Yeah, because these guys were like 9-10 feet off the ground with that posing platform.
Wasn't it on an ice skating rink too? And they built the stadium over the ice skating rink?
It was an ice skating rink, and they had to hold the contest a little earlier than normal because there was a hockey game scheduled.
Wow.
That night at the same rink.
Yeah.
So the Mr. Olympia was held actually the equivalent of what would be like in the afternoon here.
Yeah.
Because the rink was already taken for the evening. That's another thing that was unusual about it. Another thing that stood out to me was that, what was that? Momo Benaziza was in the show.
Oh, yeah. That was the year he died.
Oh my God, he was the freakiest guy, one of the, probably in the of all of them in the contest. This guy had so much muscle on him; he almost looked like he couldn't walk.
Jeez,
it was incredible. And I remember talking to Steve. Oh, who was that guy from Canada with the big forearms? Steve Brisbane. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice, good friend of mine, and he was very close with Benaziza also. And I said, Steve, I said, look at Momo. I said, he looks like he's going to explode, for crying out loud. And I remember Steve saying to me, you know, Jerry, I'm a little worried about him. I said, what do you mean? He said, he takes too much stuff, man. You know, this was off the record.
Yeah.
He says, the guy has no concept of any danger involved with this stuff. I mean, he takes all these, you know, injects clenbuterol, all this kind of stuff. And sure enough, what was it, like three weeks later?
Yeah, 2 weeks later, well, I think.
They had a Grand Prix tour after the Olympics.
Right.
And I don't think I went on the Grand Prix tour that year. But, Momo died. I mean, he died.
Yeah.
Died. Yeah. I mean, there's different stories. Some say it was dehydration. He took too many diuretics. Others say that he had a heart problem.
Yeah.
I hear all kinds of stories. I don't really know. But the plain fact of the matter is the guy was in his early 30s and he drops dead like that.
Man. Yeah.
But I still remember what he looked like there in Helsinki. And I'll tell you, there's been some, like Franco, Danny Padilla, there's been some great short bodybuilders.
Yeah.
But I have to say Momo, probably for his height, had the most muscle I've ever seen on a guy that height. You know, I've never seen that much muscle.
How tall was he? Was he like Danny Padilla's height, like 5'2", 5'3"?
Danny, maybe 5'3".
Yeah.
He had as much muscle as a guy 6'2", seriously.
Yeah. Yeah,
and very thick abs. I mean, you know, nice guy too. You know, I interviewed him twice. He couldn't speak English. His girlfriend acted as interpreter. You know, but
yeah,
he had a childlike manner. You know, he's almost like a kid. You know, enthusiastic about bodybuilding, and I remember him saying to me that he says the American bodybuilders are babies. I said, what do you mean? He said, they keep worrying about the drugs, how dangerous. And he says, look, I take them all. Nothing ever happens to me.
Oh, God.
When I heard he died, I kept saying those words over and over again for months at a time.
Oh.
I said, oh, my God, he actually said that, and the guy dies just a couple of weeks later, you know?
Jeez, unbelievable.
I remember, what's his name? The guy from France with the beautiful physique.
Thierry Pesto?
No, not Terry Pastel.
Serge Dubre?
Benfato.
Oh, Benfato. Okay.
Yeah. Benfato was very close with Ben. Very, they were best of friends.
Hmm.
And he told me in an interview about 2 months later, he was still really sad. I mean, it really hit him hard, almost like Arnold with Columbo.
Yeah.
He was breathing for Benaziza when I interviewed him. And he said to me, he says, you know, that was his fatal flaw. He said, you know, he just took too many drugs. I tried to warn him. I told him to cut back. He just wouldn't do it. You know, he felt bad. You know, it was a shame. You know?
I did an interview with Porter Cottrell. Remember Porter? Yeah. And he was with him on that tour. And he tried to save him, actually. He tried to do CPR when he died on his bed. And he said the day that he died, they were coming back from the venue. I think they might have went out to eat or something. They all were in a car together. And they passed by the hospital, and he was feeling so sick all week. And they told him, they said, Momo, you want to go to the hospital? We're here. And he goes, nah, I'll be all right.
Yeah.
And that probably could have saved him, yeah.
Saved his life, yeah.
Yeah.
Porter, as you know, a firefighter, so I guess he had paramedic training.
Right.
So, you know, he did what he could. You know, yeah. A couple of guys tried to help him, but that was a big mistake. You know, they should have dropped him off at the hospital. I mean, maybe he couldn't enter compete at the contest, but so what? He's alive.
Yeah.
So he would have come back and won who knows how many. He might have even won the Mr. Olympia.
Yeah.
I mean, he had everything, the guy. He had every body part.
You know, usually when we talk about the golden age of bodybuilding, you know, like what I like to talk about on this podcast, we always talk about the 60s, the 70s, you know, the pumping iron era, and even the 80s. But then I think when you get to the 90s, I think that's when the drugs really got crazy. Because then you had the other guy, Andreas Munzer. He died like 4 years later. He died in 96.
Right. Munzer, I knew him well, so I interviewed him. Very quiet, introverted guy. Never said a bad thing about anybody. Really super nice. Very quiet guy, though.
Yeah.
I remember him telling me how he ate this type of cheese product that was popular in Europe. I can't remember the name of it. He says he practically lived on it. Because I said to him, how do you get your skin so thin? And he had cuts on top of it. I mean, he was sitting there in a tank top when I was interviewing, and he had striations, just not even flexing.
Wow. Unbelievable.
I said, how do you get your body fat so low? I said, do you ever eat any bad food at all? So then he mentioned this cheese thing, you know, this kind of cheese product. I said, does it have a lot of carbs? He says, no. Does it have a lot of fat? No. And I'm thinking, why does he think it's bad? I didn't ask him. I said, in other words, he never eats anything bad.
Right.
But I mean, I remember I felt bad when he died. I mean, you know, the German magazine printed a list of his alleged drugs. And I mean, it was enough for like six guys, for crying out loud.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I heard his liver had like the horrible, I mean, what they call pileosis hepatis. He had holes in his liver. And
jeez. That
horrible. I mean, horrible, horrible way to go. You know, he just basically bled out when they tried to do some surgery, just bled to death, you know.
Yeah.
Liver exploded, you know. I mean, it was terrible.
A lot of these bodybuilding forums, when they talk about the best era of bodybuilding, a lot of people will say the 90s because those – but I almost think they went too far in the 90s. Even though the guys looked fantastic, all those guys from that era, they were big and they were ripped. To me, that's the era where it seemed like they started to go – they didn't look like human beings anymore. You know, they started to look like cartoon characters.
I agree. See, the thing is that I think it was around the mid-90s, you know, what really turned the tide was – and I've written this in my Applied Metabolics News. I've written it many times. Is that that's when insulin came on the scene,
and
to a large degree. And I always write that you suddenly started seeing guys on the platform weighing 260 pounds, 270 pounds, and above.
Right.
Never saw that before.
Arnold never saw that before. Right.
Arnold, the biggest he ever was in a show was, I think he came close to about 235. That was it.
Yeah.
And for the one in Sydney, I think he was something like 225 or something like that, 220.
Or even lighter. I heard like 217.
Might have been 217. He's very light at the 180. Yeah. But the point is that it was a combination of insulin, growth hormone, and steroids.
Right.
Each drug alone would not give you that look. But, you know, when you combine them, they had a synergistic effect where they blew you up. They just blew you up. You got this gargantuan look.
Yeah.
And then a secondary factor, in my opinion, was this so-called site injection crap.
Yeah.
That's later in the 90s when they started putting synthol, and then they started putting other stuff in. And then you have a guy like Rich Piana, who, by the way, I'm not trying to put the guy down. I respected the guy. I didn't know him very well at all. Met him once. But he used something even worse. He was injecting little plastic beads.
Oh, really?
They wouldn't even do it in the United States. He had to go down to Mexico to do that.
Yeah, I remember reading that.
Yeah, and it gave him these just ridiculous arms that were like, they looked like a leg, for crying out loud.
Yeah, he used to train at my gym before he passed away.
Right, you know. I mean, he was a nice guy from what people tell me. I felt bad when he died.
He was very nice, yeah.
But, you know, he had this, like, arms. Anyone who stood next to him, anybody, but would look like they had tiny arms. Even the guy, Phil Heath, would look like he had no arms standing next to
him. Right.
His arms are like this, you know?
Yeah.
But the thing is, the giveaway was when Rich flexed his arm like that, there was no separation. It was just like a big ham.
Yeah.
No separation at all between the bicep tricep. That was your giveaway, that it was fake.
Right.
You know, said, and he didn't have much tricep definition either. I mean, there was just nothing there. But, you know, that was his thing. You know, I know.
I never saw him train hard, Jerry. I seen him train a few times, and it was like more like they were more concerned with videotaping everything. And he was like lifting 30-pound dumbbells for dumbbell curls. It was no intensity at all. But he didn't have to because it was all injections.
I saw him train at Gold's Gym many times. And I've never once seen him train. It was exactly like you said.
Yeah.
I saw him doing his girlfriend was working with him. He was doing like a one-arm pushdown. Looked like he had about 30 pounds on the pulley. I mean, for trying to have a skinny guy weighing 100 pounds can use that weight.
Yeah, yeah.
He had these gargantuan arms. And, of course, his arms didn't get pumped because they were already pumped as they could be.
Right. They couldn't get any bigger.
And they could have exploded all over the gym. You would have on all the machines.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean.
I mean, the bodybuilders were on steroids since the 1960s, but back then it was like hard work. You know, like I remember seeing Tom Platz in 81 and – the whole audience, I think, felt the same way. Like, we just felt like, wow, this guy must have busted his ass all year to look that much better. He looked like he put 15 pounds of muscle just on his upper body. And then the legs, you know, was like incredible.
But that's the way it really was.
Right, right.
See, you understand it. You know, I mean, I'm not going to say the guys didn't take steroids then. Of course they did.
Sure.
But you look at the programs they used. They would take like little Dianabol, maybe Decadurablin. Arnold liked a drug called Primobolan.
Yeah.
But it was so small an amount that what it did, it gave him an age in recovery. In other words, it allowed them to train hard and recuperate between workouts. And because of that, they were able to train harder. See what I'm saying? But it was actually the hard training that
made it.
Movement.
Yeah.
You know, whereas now you say, well, what does that have to do with the guys later? It started to reverse later on. Where they were taking so many drugs, the insulin, the growth hormone, the steroids, and huge amounts of poly drugs, not one steroid, but 10, you know. So they started to reverse where it was the drugs giving him most of the size.
Yeah.
Training was secondary, just the opposite of the guys in the 60s. In other words, how do I know? Because the guys in the 60s or 70s, you know, when they get off when they stopped competing and when they're off season, sure they lost some muscle and they got small, but they still had some physique left. You know what I mean? There was something there.
Yeah.
Where some of these guys today, if you take them off all their drugs and they don't train, because you have to understand these guys back then were not even trained. I mean, Arnold wouldn't even come in the gym for a couple of months.
Yeah.
And same thing. Wouldn't even bother training. So
right.
Of course, when you don't train, if you don't stimulate the muscle, it's going to get atrophy.
Yeah.
How the fuck you are, you know? So, yeah, they get smaller. It wasn't just the drugs. The fact that they weren't training hard.
Yeah.
Now, today, if you take them off the drugs and they don't train, you can get a Mr. Olympia physique, Brandon Curry, any of these guys. They're going to look like nothing.
Right.
They're going to look like athletic guys, but not Mr. Olympia competitive.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say they're going to look like a guy in the street. I wouldn't go that far.
Right.
They have some muscle because they built muscle. But not the way they look at the Mr. Olympia. They're going to look like 20% as good as they did.
Yeah.
That's my reasoning when I say that today it's the drugs more than the training that's giving guys their look.
Yeah.
That's my personal belief. Yeah.
I had that. I think I had you on the show, that Natural Bodybuilding Radio, probably 10 years ago.
I should.
And I remember there was a guy on. He was in muscular development, and he was a coach for natural bodybuilders who wanted to beat drug tests. So he would tell these guys what to take and how to pass a drug test. So I called him, I emailed him, or called him up, and I said, hey, I'd like to have you on my show. You know, you don't have to mention names, of course, but I want to see how you do this. Mm-hmm. So when we started the interview, I said, well, first of all, like, tell me a little bit, like, what's going on in bodybuilding. Now, this is already in, like, probably the 2010s. You know, I think I started the show in 2008, 2009. And so I said, you know, when I was around in the 1980s and I used to work out in the gym, I remember all the guys used to do cycles. They used to go 8 weeks on, 8 weeks off, and they would use the drugs pretty much all round, but they would start cycling off and on, off and on. And the first thing he said was, well, first of all, nobody goes off. They're on all year. He goes, if they go off for like 2-3 months, they'll lose so much muscle. It's going to take them so much more time just to regain where they were. They can never go off anymore.
I think they have an expression for that. I think, what's it called?
Cruising.
Is it cruising?
Yeah, I think
they,
so.
Like, stay on
or cruising is when they, I think they come down a little bit and then they go back on. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. There's another expression where you basically stay on low doses of steroids all year round. I can't remember what it is offhand, but that's a big mistake from a health point of view. I don't know if you know that because, You know, when you take steroids in any quantity for any length of time, they do cause changes in your body and your heart, your blood lipids or blood fats. They could cause, you know, changes in various types of tissue and all that. The good part is that when you get off the steroids, all these adverse changes revert back to normal, right? However, if you stay on the steroids, even low doses, you're not giving your body a chance to recover. So what you're doing is extremely dangerous from a health point of view. They might think that staying on low dose, oh, it's so low, what is it going to do? You know, well, I'm taking two tablets of this or right. one at a week of that. That's not the way it works. As long as you're taking the steroids, you're not giving the body a chance to heal itself, and it's going to catch up with you. I just read a study the other day, 25-year-old bodybuilders, they checked them, and these guys were on that situation where they stayed on all the time. 25 years old, they already had 25% narrowing of their coronary arteries at 25 years of age. That usually doesn't happen until you're past 40.
Yeah, so, at least.
So, in other words, these guys are like on a speeding car heading for a brick wall.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to – I believe me, I don't wish it to happen, but the way they're going now, these guys are going to have a heart attack or a stroke before they turn 30.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I say to them, I say, is it really worth it? I mean, you know, you could die. I mean, right. Come on. Seriously. I always – look at Dallas McCarver. I mean, you know, I mean, of course, he took a lot of stuff, but – I mean, he was 26 years old.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah.
The guy never had a life. He was just a kid.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, but he had his family had a predisposition, I understand. He had heart disease in his family.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks to our guest, Jerry Branum, for joining us this week. Also, thanks to our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine, for sponsoring another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And next week, we will have part two of our interview with Jerry. And now, before we leave the show, I want to read this great article written by the great Frank Zane. This is back in 1972 in the July issue of Iron Man magazine. It's called Training in South Africa for the Mr. Universe. It says, this past summer, my wife Christine and I had the good fortune to tour the Republic of South Africa during July, August, and September as guests of the South African American Bodybuilding Union. On the whole, it was a great experience. We went just about everywhere, Johannesburg, Durban, Kruger National Park, and everyone we met was very enthusiastic about training. The people were so inquisitive about how the guys in California train that they went out of their way to meet me and ask questions. We were in the limelight very often, and I must have over 20 newspaper clippings from our short stay. It was a very hectic tour at first, with a lot of traveling, and sometimes as much as 3 posing exhibitions a week. In spite of this, I did manage to train extremely well. South Africa is full of well-equipped gyms, and almost everyone is sports or physical culture-minded. I think one of the main reasons for this is due to the fact that there is no television in South Africa as yet. Thus, the people have more time to pursue athletic endeavors. My training cycle was slightly different this year. Whereas I normally train hardest during the summer to be in shape for the contest in the fall, this year, I was already in shape when summer arrived because I wanted to be close to my best for the South African tour. I spent my last 2 weeks in Santa Monica, California, training with Arnold Schwarzenegger at Gold's Gym. We would average 9 workouts a week. Every other day, we worked out twice, chest and back at 11 a.m. and legs at 6 p.m. The following day, we trained delts and arms at 11 and then skipped the evening workout. Each session was about 1.5 to 2 hours. And we'd always finish off with about 15 minutes of abdominal work. When I'm training for a contest or exhibition with Arnold, I'm never able to pursue any other kind of activity. All my energy goes into these sessions. Consequently, summer is the only time I can do this because as a teacher, I'm off for summer vacation. Gains come so fast with this system that in 8 weeks, I'm in top shape. After 2 weeks, I was approaching my best condition, and Arnold was better than I'd ever seen him previously. When I left, he was a very muscular 238, and I don't see how he could improve any more than this. I understand he trained unbelievably hard that summer, so hard that he and Franco Colombo had to employ an oxygen mask between sets of squats during the hot August evenings. My training routine in South Africa was a pretty simple one. I'd get 6 workouts in a week, and I would train back, chest, and triceps one day, delts, biceps, and forearms the next day, and legs the following day. Abs were worked about 20 minutes at the end of each of these workouts. Since I only worked each body part twice a week, I'd do at least 20 sets for every muscle group. I made very good gains on this system. Although I didn't realize it at the time, I did get quite a bit stronger. Most of the gyms were equipped with Reg Park plates. Reg is very generous in the respect that he gives gym owners more than they pay for when they buy plates from him. The 25-pound plates weigh 30 pounds, and the 50-pound plates weigh 60 pounds. So here I was doing bench presses with what I thought was 280, when actually it was over 300. The best health studio I trained at was owned and operated by Jenny Graf and Franz van den Berg in Johannesburg. Both men have been finalists in the NABBA Mr. Universe and have a great feeling for the game, which is reflected in their well-equipped studio. I did a good part of my training at this club. During the last 5 weeks of my stay, I met Ray McCauley, with whom I became good friends. By the time this article sees print, Ray's new health studio will be open just outside of Johannesburg. Ray had intentions of training for the Pro Mr. South Africa contest, so we agreed to train together. Frankly, when I first saw him, I wasn't very impressed, but I knew that if he trained with me and followed my nutritional program for the next 4 weeks, he'd get into great shape. It was really rough on him at first, for I was in the final stages of preparation for the NABBA Mr. Universe, and he wasn't in very good shape. Nevertheless, he stuck it out, and he followed me through everything, and he was rewarded by placing second to Johnny Graf, who looked sensational at 43 years old, in the tall man's class. I'm certain that with continued intense training, Ray could be the best in South Africa. The South African Championship saw some good physiques. Elias Pettis, who is presently the best in South Africa, Franny du Toit, who won the Pro Mr. South Africa, Franz van den Berg, Ray McCauley, Jenny Graf, to name just a few. The standard of physique is improving in South Africa, and I think it'll come up by leaps and bounds as soon as bodybuilders become more nutrition conscious and learn to use food supplements correctly. With a few exceptions, most of the physiques are on the smooth side. During my stay, I did a show for the Bantu at a location named Kwa Thema. These black people amaze me. The majority of them live on little more than white flour and white sugar products, and yet considering this, the standard of their physiques is amazingly high. The conditions under which they live and train are poor by our standard. How they do it is beyond me. A few days after the South African Championships, I was in London for the Mr. Universe contest. I arrived 2 days before prejudging, and I did nothing but eat and relax up until the contest. The prejudging was in a different location than last year. Actually, it all seemed a bit strange to me. I like last year's surroundings much better. As usual, there were a lot of great physiques in the amateur section. Ken Waller really stood out. He had trained with Arnold for this one. I don't know if he used the oxygen mask. I could tell Arnold coached him on his posing too, and he had no real difficulty in winning. I was very impressed with Frank Colombera's leg development and Paul Grant's muscularity. I think Chris Dickerson could win this title if he would train harder than he ever has before and get razor sharp. He has great shape and symmetry, but he's too smooth in my opinion. Thinking about the professional then intrigued me. I knew Arnold wasn't competing because of the IFBB rules. Also, I didn't expect Sergio to compete, as I thought he'd be more interested in trying to win back his Mr. Olympia title from Arnold in Paris the following week. I didn't think Sergio would fare well in London anyway. While he is sensational beyond description, I think he is about 20 pounds too heavy. His appearance in London verified this. Possessed by his desire for more and more size, he has gained it at the expense of muscularity. He had bigger arms and legs. His back didn't impress me, and his chest and delts looked about the same. His waist was small, but devoid of any abdominal development. I liked him better in 1968 when he weighed 220. I knew Reg Park would be there, but I wasn't too concerned over this. While Reg is in good shape for his age, he is nowhere near the shape he was in some 10 or 15 years ago. After the show, I asked Reg if he was coming back next year to compete. He told me he was, and that the NABBA Mr. Universe gave him a great inspiration for training. I had seen Bill Pearl give an exhibition at the Mr. California event before I left for South Africa. It was Bill's first appearance in a few years, and what I saw that night didn't impress me very much. Bill looked very smooth, and I had my doubts as to whether he'd be in top shape for London. When I saw him in London, I was impressed. He was bigger and harder, and it was obvious that he and Leo Stern had left nothing to chance in preparing for this one. Bill acted like the winner, and sure enough, he was. He looked much better, I thought, the day after prejudging when he posed at the contest. The day of the prejudging, he seemed a little smooth, and he apparently had lost a few pounds between prejudging and the contest. I'm not one to argue over decisions. The judges have their reasons for voting as they do, and I respect those reasons. If I lose, all I can do is evaluate what aspects of my development caused the loss and then train to improve. However, I do feel I suffered in the final outcome by not posing next to Bill Pearl. I was most anxious to do this, and I don't understand why the judges didn't call for this, as I understood it was the procedure to have the class winners pose next to each other in similar poses. I do thank Iron Man magazine for letting me pose next to Bill on pages 14 and 15 of the January 1972 issue. I was much relieved after the contest was over. This completed my 20th show in 3 months, and I was very happy to be able to relax a little and have some fun in London with Christine. Looking back at the contest, I'm very grateful to Oscar Heidenstam for making our stay in London so pleasant. I do think Oscar should preserve tradition and continue to award the traditional Universe Trophy instead of the different one he gave this year. It was a great show, still the best in the world, and I intend to return to compete next year because, to me, the NABBA Mr. Universe is something very special. From London, we flew to Belfast, Ireland to do 2 shows for Ivan Dunbar. Then it was home to California after 13 weeks abroad. As we landed in Los Angeles International Airport, I never thought I'd miss the smog and the traffic, but it sure was nice to be home. All right, so that was by Frank Zane, and he, of course, was talking about the 1971 NABBA Mr. Universe, and Frank won the short class, and Bill Pearl was up against Sergio and Reg Park in the tall class, and as Frank said, for the overall, it's usually the short class winner versus the tall class winner, but I think the judges were so enamored of Bill Pearl because he is like a legend, and this was his 4th Mr. Universe contest, they didn't even compare him. And Frank said maybe they forgot, but he was very disappointed that he was not compared to Bill Pearl for the overall. So that was that. And then Frank came back the next year in 1972, and he won the Mr. Universe. And I think that was his last NABBA show, because then after that, he competed in the 1972 Mr. Olympia. And he was talking, of course, about Arnold competing in the Mr. Olympia in Paris. And Sergio did compete against Bill Pearl. And then that was the year that the Weeders started they were banning bodybuilders for competing in other organizations, because this was when the Mr. Olympia was just starting to get some steam. I think it was the 5th year for the Mr. Olympia, and the Weeders wanted the Mr. Olympia to eventually get big enough where it would surpass the NABBA Mr. Universe. But at the time, the NABBA Universe was the biggest contest. So Arnold had won, I believe, 4 NABBA Universe wins, and this was going to be his 5th. He was going to compete in 1971. And he wanted to win against Bill Pearl because he never competed against Bill Pearl. And then, unfortunately, the Weeders said, no, you can't do it. You can only compete in the Olympia. We don't want you going in any other organizations. So Arnold sat out that 1971 Mr. Universe, which is a real detriment to the bodybuilding world, because even today we still talk about it and we still wonder, would Arnold have beat Bill Pearl? I think he probably would have, but it really would have been a great showdown with Arnold against the legendary Bill Pearl, who at 41 years old won his last Mr. Universe. So anyways, Bill Pearl did win, and he beat Sergio Oliva, who, as Frank said, was a little bit too heavy for the contest. And he also beat Reg Park. And then, according to my friend Wayne Galash, Sergio did go over to Paris to compete against Arnold at the Mr. Olympia, and they did not allow him to compete because he was in that NABBA show. But they did allow him to guest pose. And according to Wayne Galash, who was at both shows, he was in London to see the NABBA Universe, and he was also in Paris for the Mr. Olympia. He said Sergio looked much better in Paris. So he thinks that he was holding water for the London show, and then he lost that water by the time he got to Paris. But again, we were not allowed to see another great pose down between Arnold and Sergio because the Weeders would not allow Sergio to compete. Franco was also supposed to compete in that Mr. Olympia that year, and they didn't allow Franco to compete either because of some other show he did that he was suspended. So that was the contest, the Mr. Olympia, where Arnold won by himself. There was nobody to compete against since they didn't allow Sergio to compete in it and they didn't allow Franco to compete in it. And Serge Nubre was promoting that show, and that was in Paris. And Arnold looked unbelievable in that contest. He was, I don't know how big he was, but like Frank Zane said, he was 238. And Arnold was just extremely big and also really, really shredded. So I think Arnold would have won both shows, no matter who was in it. If he would have went to the NABBA Universe, and he definitely would have won the Olympia over Sergio, in my opinion. But it still would have been great to see those pose downs, and we were robbed of that as bodybuilding fans because of these new rules that the Weeder instituted in order to make the IFBB the biggest show. And eventually, the Mr. Olympia did become much, much bigger than the NABBA Universe. That's a little bit of history for you, but that was a great article by Frank Zane. If you guys want to hear any other articles, let me know. NaturalOlympia@gmail.com. All right. That's it for the show this week. We will see you guys next week for part two of our interview with Jerry Branum, where we talk about the most exciting Mr. Olympia contest and all other kinds of topics. Thanks to our sponsors again, Old School Labs, Florida Alternative Medicine, and we'll see you guys next week. Take care.